Today we're exploring the world of numbers. Cleo Cresswell is out to make math just a little bit sexier. She's a math lecturer at the University of South Wales in Australia, an advice columnist, and she was named one of Australia's most beautiful people in 2001. Her new book is called Mathematics and Sex. Here's Cresswell talking to Steve Paulson about one of the first mathematical studies of compromise in marriage.
Well, this was an interesting study, actually. What they did is they looked at newlyweds and they observed them talk for 15 minutes and gave them scores according to their responses to each other. So if, you know, one person crossed their arms, that was negative. Or if they said something negative, like, I hate it when you say that, that was negative. And then they modeled these scores, just like how you'd model something on the stock market. And they found that 6 years later, what the mathematics revealed was that the partners that actually compromised the least were the most likely to be together 6 years' time. In 6 years' time.
Who compromised the least? In other words, you should be more honest about how you really feel.
That's right. Well, what they actually see, it's very interesting because you see, therapy has focused on empathy. And so when your partner does something, traditional therapy might focus on saying, well, you know, they've had a hard day, maybe don't be so hard on them, or, you know, when they were a child, blah, blah, blah. And what the mathematics actually revealed was that it seemed that couples that pulled the partner up as soon as possible on something that they were unhappy with actually had a better chance, you know, at the marriage surviving. And so what they're looking at now is ways to change the therapy so that people have high standards and continually fight for those high standards.
Now, what about when people first get together, when you're trying to figure out whether this is the right person for you? Do you have any suggestions there using math?
Well, the mathematics of how love develops between two people, I mean, I just think is fantastic. I mean, the first thing is that falling in love sucks. That's the main premise. Because it turns out that, I mean, I suspect you've been through this. I know you're married. You know, that you go through these oscillations. So when you first meet someone, yes, you're excited and it feels fantastic, but you're also scared and your insecurities are being revealed. And, you know, you bore all your friends about your partner and you don't eat because you're so wound up. And those things are like these waves. And so what these mathematicians did was they used, in fact, very similar to wave equations to understand what sort of couples will those waves sort of become more subdued so it becomes a deep, long-lasting partnership? Or, you know, are there couples where this just continuously oscillates? This is a very tempestuous relationship, which I've been in. I mean, for years down the track, it's just going up and down, up and down. So can we isolate personal characteristics or, you know, personality areas which will lead people to be in those types of relationships?
Can you give me an example of how this would work using these wave equations?
Well, what happens is you kind of write these wave equations and find out what are the essential ingredients to go into love. One of them is that we actually love to be loved. If you respond positively to someone, even someone that you don't like, they will like you more. It's very simple. And so you build in these things in the equations. And again, just like how you use equations to predict the stock market, you then predict what types of ingredients will lead people to tempestuous relationships down the track. I mean, maybe you'd like an example. One type of personality trait was that, you know, when you have children, like mothers, some mothers tend to be overly positive. They'll sort of talk about their children and say, yes, they're so smart and so attractive. Well, it turns out that some people have that same full-on tendency with their partner. They'll overestimate their achievements. And the ones that tend to do this are likely to set themselves up for a roller coaster ride of love.
Now, you also talk about something you call the rule of 12 bonks in deciding who's a suitable partner. You'll have to explain that one.
Look, that's just very interesting. Again, it starts off with the idea that, look, there's a 50% divorce rate. So it's suggesting that when it comes to love, we might not be doing, you know, something right. We should be looking at our behavior. So there's a 50% divorce rate. And again, if you were going to buy a DVD player and you were told that there was a 50% chance it would break down, you know, you'd be thinking twice about it. And, you know, also, you know, we never take advice. When it comes to love, we say, oh no, I just know. I just know that that's the person for me. But again, if you were buying a DVD player, you would do your research. You'd be looking on the internet or a car or something like that.
You're saying you need to have a large enough sample to be able to make the right choice.
That's right. Well, the idea is, what are the possible strategies that we could use, or that we might be using from evolution but are not working anymore? And so a good strategy is to have a test sample and then choose someone after that. And when you do the math and you look at a huge population, because that's what we're living in these days, we're meeting people over the internet, you know, everywhere in huge cities, then if you pick 12 people and then choose the next best after that for you, so that could be number 13 or 105, that will give you an over 75% chance of picking someone in the top 10 or 20%.
Now, I have to ask how you or some mathematician ever came up with the notion that after 12, you have a 75% chance of hooking up with the right person. I mean, how did you hit on the number 12?
It starts off with this old famous statistical little problem, which looks at a sultan that is looking at getting the best person with the highest dowry out of 100 women. And the women come to him one at a time and reveal their dowries to him. And he has to decide there on the spot whether he wants that woman or reject her for the next one. But once they're rejected, he can't get them back. And his aim is to get the woman with the highest dowry out of the sample of 100. And when you analyze this problem using probability theory, you find that, again, the best strategy that he should use, because if he just picked at random, that's a 1 in 100 chance. But if the best strategy he should use is pick 37 and then pick the next best after that. So reject 37 and pick the next best after that. And what happened was that you can then use that simple problem and start relaxing the boundaries and going, well, what if I don't know how many people I'm going to meet? So what if I'm not told that there's 100 people? What if there's a possibility of meeting 1,000 people throughout my general everyday life? And what if I don't need the best to be happy, like the person with the highest dowry, but what if I want someone who's in the top 10 or 20%? How can I change the mathematics? And that's when the number 12 pops out.
Now, suppose there's a social situation, I don't know, a big party, and there are lots of men there, lots of women, and you are out there wanting to find a partner. What's your best strategy?
Well, this is kind of interesting. You know, this is a bit like game theory again. It analyzes those situations just like mathematicians are employed to analyze wars. So, you know, you'll walk into a bar and you might notice someone and go, that person looks interesting. That person looks interesting, but maybe not as interesting as that first one. And so you've got groups of people that have lists of preferences. And you can imagine them, I mean, it's not fighting, but they're all sort of competing to get to those people and meet them and find out, you know, does the other person like them? And there's a lot of mathematics happening there on the interaction between these people. And it comes out at the end of the day that the people that just sort of sit back at the bar and sort of flick their hair and smile and wait for approaches actually do quite badly. And it's better to be quite aggressive, so to speak, and to move, you know, fast and hard on your first people on your preference lists.
So you should hit on a lot of people.
Yes.
And I guess you have to have kind of a thick skin there. You have to not worry too much about rejection.
Well, that's the thing. And you know what? I've been trying to apply this. I keep thinking, okay, I've got to do it. The mathematics is telling me to, and I just don't have the guts.
Now, I think a lot of people would say that at some fundamental level, when you're talking about the chemistry that comes up between two people, that's just something that math really can't deal with. I mean, there are just too many variables, and there's just something sort of mysterious, almost mystical about it.
Well, we love that, don't we? We love that whole mystical side of things. But the point is that mathematics is not about taking away that mystical side. See, for me, you know, sometimes words aren't enough to describe love. Sometimes we need to resort to poetry or dance or music or paintings. And mathematics is just another such thing. It's just another way to connect with what's outside, you know, our environment. You know, it is just about revealing those patterns and just showing those patterns to us. Whether we want to take them on board or not is up to us.
Now, there are some cases that would seem to defy logic. I mean, there are people who are not conventionally attractive in any sense, but seem to get a lot of attention. And I have to say, my producer, Veronica, mentioned Gerard Depardieu as one example here. How do you explain something like that?
You mean through mathematics?
Try if you can, yes.
Look, there are a lot of studies that look at what makes someone physically attractive or emotionally attractive. Now, one thing is that humans find similarity attractive, so that if you're similar to someone, you'll find them attractive. And also there's been a lot of studies on physical attractiveness, like symmetry is supposed to be attractive. The more symmetrical you are, the more attractive you'll be. But the mathematics that's been used to understand physical attraction has been quite skin deep, really. It's only been looking at like symmetry. Symmetry is quite a simple mathematical area, and that there is so much more mathematics. In fact, there's been some studies of fractal geometry, and are there people that have certain fractal dimensions, to use some mathematical jargon, in their face that would make them more attractive? And that's what I want to see more studies of, because that's when I think someone like Gérard Depardieu will fit in. You know, mathematics, it's really at the beginning of this area, and there's so much to be found. And in fact, that's what I'm trying to highlight as well. Mathematics is this blossoming field, and there's so many things that we can do, and isn't it amazing?
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I think we have the subject for our next interview. It'll be Gérard Depardieu and fractal geometry.
Can I talk about that?
I think that's a whole other conversation to pursue.
A 3-hour conversation.
Cleo Cresswell is the author of Mathematics and Sex. Steve Paulson spoke with her.